Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Trail Culture. I'm your host, Em Robertson, and I'm so stoked that you're tuning in. Trail Culture is already a year old, and we're on to season two of the podcast episodes. I can't believe how the last year has flown by. Thank you to each and every one of you for following along, listening to the episodes, giving feedback. I really couldn't have done any of this without all of you. As you all know, season two of Trail Culture is fueled by Carbon Endurance. They are an endurance sport consulting company, and they really have you covered in terms of fuel and hydration for all of your performance needs. It's amazing to be able to work with a team who understand athletes, understand the trail space, and are working to ensure that athletes can have their best training and racing performances possible. Really excited about that partnership. Go and check them out. The details are in the show notes. I hope you guys enjoy the episode, and I'll see you back here next week for our next one. Guys, welcome back to another episode of Trail Culture. We have everybody's favorite MC, an adventure guy, race director, a husband, recently a dad, Robert LeBrun in the house, affectionately known as Brundle. And I'm just super excited to have him here. We've been planning this and have had it in the pipeline for a while, and that speaks to his adventurous spirit. He's been all over the country since we initially started chatting. He had a race go on. He was doing something with his masters. I don't know if you've handed in yet. So yeah, this guy is everything, and we love it. We're here for it. Brundle, thanks for joining us. I'm super stoked to be chatting to you and to hear a bit of your story.
Yeah, stoked to be here. Eventually. Thank you for your patience.
I'm glad we found each other. I'm like, yeah, getting an adventure guy in is always a fun test, I can say. But Brundle, we have loads to chat about, but just to start off, always love to give like a bit of a bigger picture so that people can get to know the guests. I always forget that not everybody knows some of the humans as well as I do. So tell us a little bit about you. How did you find yourself in the sporty space and the trail culture that is on offer in South Africa?
Sure. Okay. So I guess I very much came out of school from a hockey background. So that was kind of how I guess running started, from purely to stay fit for hockey as the objective, very much.
Nice.
And I guess I went to university, played hockey out of school, obviously, in university, and kept running, stayed fit, always wanted to try to be one of the fittest in the team, and it was always a focus, you know. And then I was studying conservation at the time whilst playing hockey. And crazily enough, in my practical year, which was part of my studies, I got, well, the reserve I worked at had a trail run, which is the Helderberg Mountain Challenge.
No way.
It still exists. And that I had to go and be a marshal or something at the top of the mountain. And long story short, but I had to land up like helping airlift a guy off the mountain, and it was involved in a rescue situation, and just it was just cool to be a part of the sporting event in a conservation or sort of reserve setup. And I was like, oh my word, this is kind of maybe the merge of my favorite two passions. And I think the conservation thing specifically working the way I was like that year, I was like, oh, I kind of maybe have a pull towards the sporting thing.
Yeah.
And I was still very involved in hockey, and I still wanted to keep playing hockey, and the conservation thing didn't quite blend so well with sport. And anyway, long story short, I landed up working for the trail running company instead of necessarily going down a conservation avenue. And
so cool.
Yeah, that was pretty much that. Then I just, before I knew it, I was a freelance on so many different events, mountain biking, trail running, you name it.
Yeah.
And that was like, probably started a bit of like almost a 10-year career in sports behind the scenes of mostly trail runs and then like a bit of mountain biking stuff.
So epic. I know, I feel like people are going to hear this podcast and go, where have I heard that voice before? And it's like anyone who's done like some of your bigger trail events, trail running and mountain biking, this is the MC voice. You would have heard him welcome you home in your kind of sleep deprived state. So I mean, I'm thinking, I'm like off the top of my head, I'm like Maxi, Mutt, Skyrun, like you've been at all the places, and you somehow still have energy at 1 o'clock in the morning when no one else does. So cool. And did that kind of come naturally to you, Brundle, like being on the mic, welcoming the runners in.
Yeah, I guess so. I think so, for sure. Like the energy side of things was always there. And the want to encourage people and get people out there and encourage them to whatever, do they 5K, do they 10K, do they 100K.
Yeah.
Like that was always something that I enjoyed cheering on and being a part of. So then when it started to merge into doing a bit of an MC role here and there.
Yes.
It just, yeah, I guess flowed quite naturally and then I loved it. Okay. I love it, absolutely. And sure. So much fun.
Yeah,
it's the best.
That's
for
so
me.
Cool.
Like really it is.
And were you able to, I think I saw a post of yours on Instagram a while ago where you were like, this year I'm not running UTCT, I'm back on the mic. Like do you get managed to still like get out and do the actual events, or you, I can imagine now you people just ask you like, bro, come MCR events, and then you're like, oh, I was actually gonna run. Like do you still get out for your ventures?
It sucks where it's got to a point where it's quite tricky. It's not necessarily I'm so busy for, I guess life just gets, I don't know, somehow it's a lame excuse, but it sometimes gets busy and like, it's not only MCing, but I must say, I guess MCing definitely takes up a fair few weekends and then I'm organizing my own events on the side.
Yeah.
So then that takes up like, so actual like weekends where you have to yourself to go and do stuff.
Yeah.
It's quite min. And yeah, I guess I'm also not very good at like foreplanning that I haven't like necessarily entered anything those weekends. So I do here and there for
okay.
sure.
Yeah.
Probably more in the adventure racing space. I guess I at least lock down those. They're a bit more of a dime a dozen versus trail ones runs. There's one every weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess those, I try definitely sport as much as I can. I mean, I definitely do just not necessarily events as much as I used to.
No, this is the guy who he organizes his events and he goes and recce's and checks out every piece of the route before he sends you out there. I remember I was laughing at your Cogman's event a couple of weeks ago where you were like, guys, don't be mad at me for where I sent you. I was there myself just the other day and I was like, that's rare having a race director who's actually been on the route. But before we get there, Brundle, the conservation side, that's something you mentioned. And I believe you're doing a master's, which I don't know how you are fitting everything in. How does that fit in? What are you doing it in? How does that kind of academic side play a role in like your career right now?
Sure. So I guess after working in events for quite a period, I was like, oh, feeling like I need a little bit of a change. I ended up going to work up in the bush and I kind of thoroughly enjoyed it. And I was like, oh, okay, I must get back into the conservation game.
Yeah.
And then, I basically was like, okay, kind of looked at a couple of jobs and I was like, oh, pretty much all of them need a master's or kind of where I was looking. So I was like, I'm really keen, have been keen. My supervisor had mentioned this specific project on lions and I have always enjoyed, I guess, lions and big carnivores that I was like, okay, cool. That's maybe a focus. And I reached out to him on a whim and I said, listen, is that study still available type thing?
Yeah.
And yeah, that was that. He was like, yeah, I actually had a student pull out this morning, so it's still available. And I was that's meant to be. And I guess things just merged from there. And then it was funny, at the same time as I started my master's, basically this little budding events company popped up. And then it became like this, I don't know, synergy of both of them doing, you know, ticking along and doing a thing. And then the events kind of grew a bit more than probably I'd expected, that I kind of just, you know, focused a lot more on that my master's has taken a bit longer than planned, but it's still ticking over, which is good.
Nice.
Hopefully done by the end of this year, but yeah.
Epic. No, yeah. Nothing wrong with the scenic routes. I'm like, I know how that feels. But Brundle, I mean, your background, like I'm like, we had like a brief chat now and you were talking about like, you've been in this like trail space for quite a long time. And I mean, you were at like that, like where Helderberg, that run's still going. That's still a thing. That reserve is like, I can't believe you were there. That's epic. But where did the kind of trail running, so it was like hockey trail running, and then it merged into adventure racing. And tell us a bit, like, this is one of the things I really wanted you to chat about. I've tried, and this is a shameless plug, Suzanne Hobson. I'm still waiting for you to come on the pod and talk about.
Oh, she'll be a banger interview.
Adventure racing and that side. But like, I feel like that is a growing sport here. I think globally it's already got quite a big name, but like, tell us a little bit about that history, the sport coming into South Africa, how you got involved.
Yeah, so crazily enough, it's actually in the grander scheme of things globally, it's actually quite, I guess, quite big and relatively well organized in South Africa. I mean, it's still small. There's only like, you're looking at like probably 5 to 10 races in the year. So like one a month, if that.
Around the world, Brandel?
No. Sorry. Oh, yeah. Sorry. That's in South Africa.
Yeah. Okay.
That's
cool.
In South Africa. But yeah, I can't actually remember precisely how I heard of it. I think it was an event that I was working on between Cape Town and Maritzburg. It was like this ride, and then you would run the comrades on the last day type thing. You would ride to Maritzburg, and then you'd run. And one of those like support crew did this thing called EA, and I was like, oh, that sounds cool. And like she's like, yeah, we race for like 500Ks, and we go kind of nonstop, and we sleep wherever we can sleep. And I was like, oh, this sounds pretty cool. And then like, I don't know, I obviously was really close friends with her for quite a period in time. And then I guess the circles just landed up like you realize in the event circle, there's actually quite a lot of adventure races as organizers as well. Maybe because they have cut their teeth in adventure racing and realized like, yo, it's so much easier to organize a trail run or a mountain bike ride.
Just like
only.
One of the things.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. That I guess, yeah, before I knew it, I was like, that is a sport I've got to do. I've always liked maps. I've always liked geography. Yes. It was my favorite like subject at school. So I was always a sucker for navigation. And then when I figured out, it was like a merge of my favorite sort of three sports.
Like. Yeah.
Almost all in one, nonstop. I've always enjoyed the endurance element. And I was like, I've got to do this thing.
Yeah.
And then, I missed out on a couple of EAs, which is, for those that don't know, it's like it's a 500K long race. It's the one for the year in Africa. And it's generally like, you know, most adventure races will try and do it every year. It obviously moves venue. Okay.
And that's Expedition Africa. Big dog.
Correct.
Race. If you're in for that, then you're in for real.
For sure. Yeah. So like generally that's, as I said, most guys will try and do that at least and build up to it or whatever.
Nice.
And yeah, I think eventually I got to do my first one in 2019, which was on the Rodrigues Island, which is like near... Yes. Reunion, and it's like this random island in the middle of nowhere, and we landed up racing for 350Ks on an island that was only 14Ks long and 8Ks wide. So like it was just this crazy thing.
Yeah.
And I guess the element of it, there's so many facets that excite me about it. Obviously the navigation being high up there and just, but it just feels like you're raw, and it's like as close to being an explorer as you can get nowadays.
That's so
like,
cool.
It's, you know, you set this course and you're just with your mates and you're just racing. And there's a lot of elements that excite me. And I guess you just get to crazy epic places that you just would never. Like you can drive through the Elgin Valley and be like, oh, yeah, we went up there and we did that and we climbed that peak and that was like midnight. And then we were down there at like 5 a.m. And then you're like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can do that throughout the country as you race more and more. So
that is so epic.
I guess that's cool.
Oh, but Brandel, so adventure racing, I mean, typically you've got your like your paddle leg. So it's paddle, bike, trek. Is that the
pretty much okay. that would make up 98% of the course. Sometimes there's like a little bit of caving or there's a rope work element or there's a couple of other bits of spice thrown in there, but pretty much those three elements make up the sport.
I just wanted to like kind of establish that. But going and a typical adventure race or something like Expedition Africa, 500Ks. I mean, so how many days are we talking about on average? I know one nav era can add a day to your.
So maybe I've got a quick story on that. An adventure race in the Titicaca, and I swear to you, it was supposed to be a 100-hour race. So what's that? That's basically 4 days. We only got out of the first big valley at, I think, about 45 hours.
Oh,
no jokes.
Gosh.
So like we'd kloofed and we got the kloof section and then we did like a short bike ride and then you went into this big trek into those Titicaca Mountains behind Nature's Valley there.
Oh, stunning.
And I've never been in such a wild place. So there was this old track from the 1960s, no jokes, that was on a map, but it... no longer exists basically for 80-90% of its bits, and you would find it, you would lose it, you would find it, lose it. Anyway, we landed up messing the navigation and going in loops and sleeping a couple of times, and it was crazy. But we got to know that valley wildly, and it's like sometimes the adventures are just unrivaled. But generally speaking, your front teams on like a 500K race can do probably like 3.5 to 4 days.
Okay.
If the terrain's easier going, then sometimes 3 days.
Okay.
So like Namibia, for example, this year.
Yes.
I think Songlines did just over, which is South Africa's, generally South Africa's leading team, did just over 3 days, I think.
Wow.
And yeah, that's nonstop. And then, yes. But then World Champs, for example, I think we were out, for example, it's like 6.5 days.
Yeah, yeah.
And we kind of finished just outside the top 10. So like
yeah.
The front guys did four days. Four days. And a bit, I think.
And I mean, so with something like nonstop, so how does the setup work, Brundle? I know you've got, so do you have four people in your team generally?
Yeah.
And it's like, does it need mix of guys and girls?
Yeah, so like generally just needs to be one person of the opposite sex. So it's,
okay.
Can easily be two guys, two girls, three girls, one guy.
Yes.
But I guess the more common racing scenario is three guys, one girl.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of the racing category. You can enter as four female team or a four male team, whatever. Okay. You just don't necessarily qualify into like the race element.
Okay, I see. And I mean, so, and within your team, are you looking, so I realize that there is definitely like strategy to this stuff, and it's like,
for sure,
you would have somebody who I would assume is like on nav, like, and that needs to be one person who you should really try not to question. That's something I realize I'm learning. Don't make their job harder yeah, than it already
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
So nav, but like what sort of like skill sets are you looking for? So like putting a team together, like, yeah, what are the things that you want to keep in mind?
Yeah, I think, I mean, yeah.
Other than just insane levels of fitness.
No. It's, I mean, there's a bit of that, but it's also just a matter of, I guess, your number one element is, especially on the really long ones, is just an ability to roll with the punches.
Yeah, and that's cool.
Like, I think that's what makes adventure racing so incredibly fun and exciting for me, is every single race is so different. You're sure trail runs are different and mountain bikes are different, but like an adventure race is a completely different course, completely different area. And you just, sometimes different team members, obviously
yeah.
If you remove that element, it makes life a little bit simpler if you've got a similar team all the time, but you just constantly having to adapt, make plans, change, mentally get over a navigation error or whatever. Yes. Like, so you just continuously throw in, yeah, curveballs, and it's cool. Like that's exciting. Yeah, I can't remember if I answered your question there, but
you did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you want people who can kind of,
yeah,
fight fast, stick it through.
Sorry, that's
and the, there's yeah, yeah, yeah. But there's like a level of, I think for you guys, your team at least, I'm going to ask you about now. It's like, even for something like Expedition Africa this year, you were quite competitive. Like,
sure.
Or you're going in,
for sure.
And it's not just all about like you. There's a fine line between like being chill enough that it's lacquer versus like, okay, but we're also here to like do a thing.
Yes.
So getting that tension right, I can imagine, is interesting.
For sure. So I think like teammates, I guess that you're on a similar page.
Yeah.
In terms of where you want to go and what your expectations are. Yeah, I guess people you get along with is immense.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, anything, if you guys aren't completely aligned or there is something that bothers you, like once
yes.
you're 3 nights in and sleep deprived, like
yeah.
it's easy to fight, because in reality, I guess that's also like a key ingredient to an adventure race, is someone that's just keen to roll with the punches and keen to just
yes.
stick it out and go the distance. And
yeah, you've got a specific type of person that's yeah. out there for this.
Yeah.
yeah.
And enjoy it. I guess that's the key
yeah.
because it's, yeah, it's, long and hard.
Yeah.
Like, that's the reality.
Yeah.
But there's an epicness and something so special in that.
Yeah.
But it's not everyone's cup of tea, for sure. Yeah. Like, I genuinely believe, and especially with my events company, like, the sport appeals to so many more people than know about it.
Yes.
Or than are exposed to it or have committed to it. And that's where, I guess, a lot of maybe me bringing in some shorter races is encouraging people to go, okay, wait, let me try this thing. Let me try it out, you
yeah.
know? See if it's my cup of tea.
Yeah.
to kind of just remove those barriers of entry and make it a bit more digestible for someone that doesn't know the sport, because it can be like quite daunting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different elements to it and team members, and it's like very different to just being able to put your tackies on and run
and go for it.
Yeah, and just go for a run yourself.
I've never met somebody who has tried adventure racing and gone, oh man, that was the worst thing ever. So that's a good, I mean, there's definitely low moments, but
for sure.
Yeah, actually, I'll save that story for just now. I've got such a funny story about one of your events I don't know if you know about. But so, Ranul, on your, before we go to your kind of events company and how you've kind of made adventure racing more accessible, tell us about your team. I see you repping the merch here. Terramato, is that how I say
that's it? Yeah.
So what does that mean?
Mother Earth.
Mother Earth. Okay, nice.
So it's not my brainchild. It's actually Andrew King's brainchild, who was like, the two of us were really motivated, I don't know, two years ago probably, that we were like, okay, cool, we must make a little bit of a proper team here.
Nice.
And have a name that kind of at least just goes through. And mostly Andrew invested the time in thinking of a good team name, and we bounced them around and anyway, came up with this one.
Okay.
And it's cool. It's been fun. Like, as I said, I've been racing a bit, and yeah, it was very lucky on, I think, 2020, somewhere just after COVID.
Yeah.
It came together where two yokes I had raced with that kind of came back out of retirement, being Andrew being one and Zane being the other.
Nice.
I'm sure most people know Zane, the organizer of Mutt. And it was just meant to be. And then at the same time, Corinne had been messaging and been quite keen for a while to be in the sport. And
yes,
the cool thing is, like, I guess I was maybe the sort of centerpiece that had raced with all of them, but also each one had at least raced with one other. So, like, it was very much
cool.
A team that was just like meant to be.
Yes.
And
so what was that? What was the team's first appearance as, like, Terramato?
Lesotho.
Nice. Yeah. Okay, cool.
I think as from Expedition Africa side. Yeah. So that was what, 2021.
And then I know, was it, where are we now? Was it last year where Zane, as you guys know, he's been on the podcast before, George Mutt, epic guy. He's busy doing cool things in Chamonix right now.
Correct.
And I think, what did you call, you wrote an Instagram post and I can myself, you were like, you've never met somebody who can write a PhD in like Fussbait or something. Something along those lines.
Suffer City.
And Zane is that type of human. But he had like a stint where you guys were getting ready for, I think, Expedition Africa, and he got really sick. He got malaria.
Proper.
And then did he end up racing with you guys that year?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that tell us a bit of the story.
So that was actually, that was last year. That was World Champs. So it's the biggest adventure race that has come onto South African shores, for sure. Only time we've had World Champs, which is...
Oh, and we hosted it.
We hosted World Champs in St. Francis Bay. And yeah, that was huge because like over 100 teams came out, which is for adventure racing, that's almost unheard of. Most world champs get like 70 to 80 teams, which is already a lot.
Yeah.
And so to have 100 was huge.
Yeah. And competitive.
And the course
that's
was
cool.
Big. The course was like 900 Ks.
Yes.
So like everything was, the ingredients that were there for just like an epic onslaught of adventure.
Yes.
So... yeah, it was amazing. And then anyway, Shane, in April, I think it was, Zane got malaria just before Matt. Then he rolled straight after, out of malaria. I think he actually got a bit earlier, than April. Straight after that, he rolled like straight off his, no jokes,
like
borderline deathbed.
Yeah, hard. Yeah.
He rolled straight from that into Matt, got hammered by Matt, because he's not capable, just because he was, you know, it's a huge thing
direct
to pull off.
Yeah, when you're 100%
huge.
Healthy. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, I guess for definitely a month or two, it was quite quiet. We just kind of like gave him his time to see if he could pull himself together to be able to race the thing. And then I think with about, no jokes, with probably like 2 months to go, he's like, okay, I'm in. Or 3 months to go, he's like, I'm in.
Unreal.
And then we're like, awesome. And I think shame. I think physically he didn't get as much time to prepare and get himself rack and ready. But I mean, granted, his body had taken some shots that he rocked up to the start line, I think a bit undercooked. maybe in comparison to the other three of us, that from early on he was under the pump And then he remained that way for like, no joke, 6.5 days. And he just kept coming along and just kept like going, okay, I'm coming. I'm here.
Yeah.
So that's why I said he can write a PhD in phosphate because, I mean, I've raced with him a lot, so I've seen it before, but that was power.
And I see every year it feels like you guys do this. There's some or other variation of mustache or beard or some like, I don't know, you guys being fierce that way. I love it. And so that, so last year, okay, wait. With World Champs, that was, I mean, you guys finished 10th. And I remember chatting to Suzanne about this and you guys were like, at the end of like almost 900 Ks, it ended up being kind of like a sprint finish where you were like, dicing with another team for that top, for that 10th spot. Eh?
Yeah.
How the heck does that work? How do you sprint finish after like being out there for days? Like,
I guess I'm quite bad. I think like when I was at school, I wasn't the most competitive oak. And now you throw me into a competitive environment and I'm like, it's bad. I'm a man possessed. I'm like, I'm on, I'm ready. When we rolled into that last transition, I was like, Oaks, pack.
You're like,
without blowing smoke up my ass, I was like, just pack me. I'm ready. Let's go. I can't wait. I just want to, this is in reality what we've been doing 6 days for, is to rock up to this point where we can now die someone. Like that's all I don't know why we did the 6 days. We should have just diced them from the start, but now's the time.
Yeah.
And it was also a South African team, funny enough.
Yeah.
And it was immense. We didn't ever expect to see them because we caught up to them near the end of the leg, the previous leg. And then, it was just, it's exciting because like, I think that it's a cool thing in the sport where like, it's definitely not remotely the be all and end all, like the result, and certainly not for our team.
Yeah.
But it is fun to be competitive.
Yeah, like,
it's
there was fun just this, to all take of a sudden this carrot and you're like, shucks. Yeah.
So like, we were like, okay, Kiff, game on. So then, as I said, we both basically rolled into the last transition with a 42K trek leg. Which I think for some people, they're like, oh my word, a whole marathon. And we were like, it's the home straight. This is nothing.
Yeah, you're like, it's only 42 like, Ks.
It's easy game. We got this. But like a little bit cockily so too, because like you're just like, okay, Kev, we just pack lights and we go. It's fine. We'll figure it out. Like how long can it be? How bad can it be? I guess it's also funny. You get into a zone in an adventure race. As Lance Kime always speaks about.
Wild.
It's like his favorite thing is like just getting into that space. And it is Kiff. Once you're about two, three days into an adventure race.
Yeah.
I mean, without speaking cockily, like invincible is not the word, but you just become like,
you just become numb to
like suffering and difficulty. And you're just like, this is Kiff. We're just doing this thing. Yeah. And we're like, if we got to go 40Ks. Look, see that far peak? We got to go there. And we're like, okay, cool. We'll only be there in like 10 hours. And we're like, cool. And it's, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you just like, it just becomes this epic journey together where things aren't a big deal. So anyway, as I said, this last 40K trek became a sprint finish. And it was just fun because we obviously know the other team well, being South African. And it was like a fun friends race where we're like, okay, we got them dialed in here. And then we like very quickly were on the beach together. And then like, it was like, okay, who's going to make like a bit of a move?
And is there like banter going on or is this like dead silence?
No, there's definitely a bit of banter. Definitely a bit of banter. I think they still hate us for not saying goodbye. Well, they went that way and we went that way. And I was like, well, I mean, do we have to say goodbye? I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they want to come with us.
Because you like, you also don't want to seem arrogant. Like, bye. And then they're like, whoa. Well, what
exactly.
Do you mean bye?
Yeah. No, exactly. So we always joke about it. I mean, I've actually subsequently in this year, Namibia, raced with one of the guys that was in the other team. So it's quite funny how it's this cool, banterous, epic community of people that just love adventure and love sporting and love being out there for the right reasons.
You know?
I think that's the cool thing about the adventure racing community is like, at the core of it all, you're there, what I would believe, for the right reasons. Like, you're not focused on your flipping milligrams and your lightweightness and because it's like it's mostly over that distance, most of that stuff is kind of just irrelevant.
Yeah.
It becomes about just being there. And being present and doing the thing.
Yeah. And that's so cool that you guys like what the places you get to see. So you mentioned like Tsitsikamma, sure. And even there, like the Eastern Cape where you guys were racing. I know that my folks are from there now, or they live there now. So that like Sundays River, that like, that is, and it's also like a variety of terrain. Like what you started in and what you would have gone through all looks quite different. And like Eastern Cape bush compared to like what you have here, vastly different. So just so cool. And we're going to get into the Namibia stuff now, but just on the world champs side, like you racing, you dicing, it's right at the end. So the strategy side of stuff and like the nav, just like take us through, like, what does it look like? So for somebody who's trying to understand adventure racing, so like the different legs, how do you get from A to B? What are the rules in transition? Sure. Like, yeah, what are you dealing with?
Yeah, so I guess generally speaking, a team will have a navigator. And then often, like, especially good teams or even just experienced ones, or actually could be novice, have like a backup nav or someone that's equally as good. And that's also quite a cool thing, is to have two people on the map, because it does, especially as the longer the race goes, it becomes immensely like draining.
Yeah.
Like so much so that I've genuinely looked at the map many times and just gone,
seen line swimming.
Oh my word. I've looked at it and gone like, this makes no more sense.
Yeah.
Like it made sense 5-10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I'm now looking at it and I don't know what's going on.
Wow.
Once I've almost in like a bit of a grumpy state, passed it on to Andrew and been like, oh, it's yours. I'm over this.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Good luck, yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't often happen, but yes. So generally a navigator, and then you will, depending, you get given sort of what's called a leg breakdown before the race.
Okay.
Some event organizers give a little bit more away than others. I try to keep as much to myself as possible.
Nice.
That it's more of an adventure, more of a surprise. But you get given like a vague estimate on the length of legs. So you're cool. You know you're starting on foot, let's say.
Okay.
So you're going for a trek or a trail run for whatever, 5 hours.
Yeah.
And you know, okay, cool. It's probably like 20 to 30 Ks, depending.
Yeah.
Okay. And then like you'll get to a certain point, and on the maps, generally the maps are topographical maps. So like the, you know, the kind of iconic map set for South Africa. And yeah, you basically find checkpoints along the way. So it's an adult treasure hunt, as I call it. That's all adventure racing is, if you ask me.
I was going to say that. What is it like? What's that show where you have to find the tickets and you're in teams, but they pair up like random people and yeah, you have to like get your golden tickets.
Well, you know that that's actually how adventure racing did start. So the guy, Mark Burnett, the guy that started Survivor.
Yeah.
Prior to Survivor, basically made adventure racing. Like,
unreal.
There was a thing called Eco Challenge, which was an annual big adventure race from, I think the last one was in 2009. From 99 to 2009, for 10 years, they had this thing called Eco Challenge. And that was like, I think that was early or before Survivor Days. And that was the thing. And
so
that was a big thing. It was on big TV. It was like, so quite a, some South African teams went to it. Anyway,
I watched that as a kid.
They rebirthed it, called the World's Toughest Race in 2019, and one South African team went, and it was really cool. It was on Amazon Prime, and
nice.
Bear Grylls was the host, and then COVID extinguished that fire.
Yeah,
because I think they were going to do a second, which would have been amazing. But anyway, I guess that's how the sport was born, and adult treasure hunt, and you find some checkpoints, and then you'll get to a transition, and then you know, okay, cool, we're changing from foot to bike, and your bikes will generally be delivered there, and you'll have maybe a box where you can put some stuff and food and resupplies or whatever.
Okay.
And then you hop onto the bike and you do that, and then you do that depending on the race. Maybe it's a 10 leg race or it's a 5 leg race or whatever, and you're doing that.
And is transition quite a crucial time? Because I can imagine like you need to, almost like the F1 drivers, get in, get what you need, get out. But if you're going from like, say you're on leg 5 now and you've already done the bike a couple of times and the trek or the row, stuff starts to get messy.
Yeah.
Where's my food? I can't remember when last I slept.
Big
All of those
time.
Things play a role, yeah.
Big time. I mean, I swear, I think if you had to, and that's why this, I think adventure racing will never be an immense spectator sport, is that by day 4, it is, I think as someone that's like well slept and not fatigued, they're like, what are these oaks doing?
It's like a because bunch like, of crazy toddlers running around, not knowing what the heck is
like,
going
we'll
on.
We'll be in transition and I would think I'm going fast, but I'm probably looking like I'm a kid trying to work out how this Allen key works for the first time.
Yeah.
Because you're just,
And you think you're like F1 precision doing the things.
It's hilarious. But that said, that even more so makes the fact that there is that level of fatigue is like even more so makes transitions important because it can easily be an hour and a half.
Yes.
If you're dawdling.
Yeah.
Or it can be, I guess when you're fresh, it can be 10 minutes.
Yes.
No jokes.
I remember asking Sue, like, so Suzanne Hobson, legend, she will be on the podcast.
Surely.
And asking her, like, because she came with you guys. I think she was a relatively last minute addition to this team.
Yeah, she was a champion. Shame Corinne, who was like the lady that raced with us for quite some time and was always super motivated and a legend part of the team. She was struggling with a constant injury. So I think about 3 months before she had to eventually just say, rather than leaving us last minute, just say like, listen, Oaks, I'm going to call it earlier rather than not.
Yeah.
And Suze, it was a big thing.
Yeah, because she got the call up. Yeah.
She had, I think her longest adventure race up until that point had been my 40 hour.
I was going to say, it was like your 2 day. Yeah. Well, I don't know if it was supposed to be 24 and ended up being 40.
No, that instance, it was supposed to be 40. I am known for that, but not that time.
But, and she, I remember we, like the first thing, because we were all backing her, there was a group, like we were following along.
Amazing.
And then, I think one of the first things she like came back and she was out of braai, and this was a couple of days later and she was still looking a bit zonked, and we asked her like, when did you sleep? And she's like, no, you don't, or like not on purpose, or like you sleep when you think like no one else is paying attention, and then you maybe get like 11 minutes in, and then someone's like, no, bro, come, we need to go. And I was like, yeah. And she said, you also go into this state, this like zombie like state. And then you get like suddenly a second wind or a fifth wind or sixth wind. And then you come out of it. And she's like, you're kind of going in and out of like, and she said some of the time she was like, is she actually conscious? She's like, she's not quite sure. And I was like, that's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think especially like, Suze did incredibly well for her first adventure race of that length.
Yeah.
Because I think that is the thing about the sport. Like, that's why I want to make these multiple tiers in my own account, like events thing, is that like you've got levels to progress to.
Yes.
Like, for sure, some people don't need to start at a beginner level because they're quite experienced and maybe they've trail run a lot or they've done 100 milers or whatever. So they're kind of used to a couple of the elements.
Yeah.
But there's a lot to like get through and figure out. And especially in a really long adventure race. I think not luckily because she was super capable, but I think it obviously helps having people that are experienced. I mean, it's crazy to think pretty much the best team in the world are ages 51, 46, 46 and 46 in like what sport?
Yes.
And it's so crazy. Many people would look at that and be like, cheapers, this is a sport for geriatrics. But no jokes, those four people at ages high 40s and 50s would come almost without a shadow of a doubt top 10 in every single element in South Africa.
Yeah, on its own, yeah.
Probably.
Crazy.
Certainly like paddling, because they're New Zealanders. They'd be immense. And like, yeah. So like, yeah, it's a sport for experience. So I think anyway, in Suzanne's case, like I think it was good to have some experienced Oaks around her. But again, it's still a lot to process and be a part of and take on.
And I mean, you guys did that, so it was world champs, and then like, was that the qualifier then for Namibia this year, or was that two separate things? Was Expedition Africa a different?
So this was Expedition Africa's last race officially. So the expedition, well, with the current organizers, it's now been sold and it's going to happen in 2026 again. But Expedition Namibia was kind of their swan song.
Okay.
And yeah, I guess no, it's, there is no particular qualification. You can, if you do win a certain series in South Africa. So there's a regional series here every year. And if you win that overall, you do get an entry into World Champs.
Okay.
So that's World Champs though. Expedition Africa's I guess generally one of the races, the big races on the sort of series, but it's the one in Africa, if that makes sense. So most local guys do that one because it's obviously closest and, to be honest, the cheapest, I guess, to do.
And I mean, what did it look like between like finishing world champs and then prepping for Expedition Africa and going to Namibia. And for those, I'll link it in the show notes. They were like unreal photos courtesy of Zaxxon that came out, which gave us like a glimpse into like the epic landscapes you guys were moving through. But yeah, like putting the team together, getting out there, getting that done, kind of, yeah, take us through that a bit.
Yeah, so I think after world champs, we had kind of, myself, Zane, Andrew and Suzanne had kind of built up quite a bit to it and spent quite a lot of effort and energy and time to it. That after that, the two older buddies, I always joke that I pulled them out of retirement, Andrew and Zane, went a little bit quiet. So we were like, okay. And then like we kind of chatted a bit and then it got like, anyway, long story short, I guess getting a team to the start line of an adventure race is already often...
like a feat in itself, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. A lot can go wrong. There's a lot of elements to it. But it's all worth it. And anyway, Andrew and Zane was out because it clashed with Mutt. So that was always the case. And then Andrew just couldn't quite get it together and work commitments and what. So anyway, it left... Luckily, Suzanne was still amped and motivated. And as long as you got at least one team member that's amped and motivated, then you're like, okay, cool. Then I'm flipping there and ready.
Yeah, we can add
so
more peeps.
So we luckily also found a kick-ass combo of oaks that kind of slotted in perfectly.
Nice.
I know I've raced with one of them before. So like, yeah, you also get to know like who would, you know, not everybody's, you know, suited to each other, and I knew that they would be like cool. They slotted in, so they slotted in, and we did Namibia. We didn't necessarily like have an immense build up to it. It was kind of like cool. We're gonna go do this thing, and when we get there, we're gonna give it a go.
Yeah,
and it was super rad, super fun, and just to touch on, Heidi and Stefan, who are the guys that organize Expedition Africa, are renowned for like taking you to amazing places and often doing like quite big bike legs to get to them. So we went from the ocean to Spitzkopper, and it was just like, I guess, yes, maybe you'll see the Zaxxon photos, but they're just, Spitzkopper was
just
such
beautiful.
A crazy place. Namibia is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
That area around Swakopmund blew me away. Stunning. Completely. Like, never seen anything like that. It's just...
And it's like very like desert vibes that you guys are moving through. Hot. And you guys were like
so hot.
Kipping in the day and not moving in the hot parts of the day and then going through the night. Right?
Yeah. So there was touching on what I was speaking to you about. Like every adventure race is so different because Stefan said at the start, he's like, the team that strategizes best around their sleep and stuff will win this race. And I was like, sleeping during the day, that's a bad idea. Yes. Even if it's hot, like I feel like the nighttime navigation is so much harder that sleeping during the day feels like it's a waste of good hours to nav. Anyway, we came day two, we came off a midday. We came off at like 12 o'clock in the middle of the day. And like, it felt so hostilely hot. We were like, okay, sleep. We're sleeping. We're sleeping.
That's what we need.
For sure. We're wasting daylight hours. No stress. Atlanta being a pretty bad decision and a crap sleep, but you only know that when you give it a try. I guess, there was quite a lot of elements to deal with, but I swear, what I didn't allude to earlier, I felt like that area and that space, it was a desert environment, but like it felt like a geological explosion. Like you were just like, you went from these monstrous dunes to no jokes, like 10 Ks later to this crazy, like what it's actually called the moon landscape. And it's like the best description because it literally looks like the moon. And
with
it's like these crazy
cool
little
rocks.
Canyons.
Yeah. Oh.
And made for navigation to be made really tricky navigation, which was, I guess in a way played into our hands, but also didn't. So,
And like getting there now, because now like there's a team change.
Yes.
So is there an element of like, okay, we arrive and we're about to trust each other with one another's lives for 6 days. And then you're like, oh, hi, I'm nice to meet you. Please don't let me die in the next like 6 days.
Yeah, I think luckily that's where Suze trusted me because she didn't really know Garth and Petrus as well, who were the new slot-ins. As I said, I knew both of them. They've both also very experienced campaigners.
Yeah.
There was even at a stage when Susan and I were sort of building the team, there was a chance of going with two more younger mates of hers that were a little bit more novice. And that's cool. And I'm flipping all for that. But it's amazing how different it becomes. And I just didn't, when it's people that are completely new, when it's like, when you got a lot of team members that are quite new to the game, it's a different story versus, Oaks that have just sort of been there and done that.
Okay.
So like, it's nice to, if you're keen to get into the sport and you're keen to go the long distance, either you're in it with a whole bunch of newbies and you guys are just going to figure it out and throw yourself out there, or it's quite nice to try and see if you can slot in with some experienced people, you know. It just helps. But yeah, it's fun.
That's so cool. Brandel, now like going into your baby, your business, no frills, no fuss, so epic. There's like different pockets to it where you've got like adventure racing. You put on an epic trail run, the Cogmans, a couple of weeks ago that we're all still talking about. But now it feels like you're making adventure racing accessible to people. So you've got stuff ranging from, I think 6 hours is your shortest one.
For sure.
So like 6, 12. So like, yeah, you're building up. You're not saying, hey guys, come and sign up for a 600K
no,
thing.
For sure.
Yeah. So like, I mean, and I think it's 3.5 years old now.
Yeah, pretty much started when it was, as I said to you earlier, it's like, it was crazy how it synchronized. It fell on my plate almost at the same time I started my master's. And as I said, it was just like this fun sideline.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I really enjoy this.
Yeah.
It's especially the adventure racing, it's really hard putting them on.
Yeah.
Like building them, and you invest a lot of energy and effort into it. But like, it's so, for me, it's so rewarding. Like,
yeah,
the whatever, 24 to 48 hours of reward on that weekend when you see all people, mates, new people getting themselves out there and getting dirty and in the outdoors, you're like, oh my word, this is so rewarding.
Yeah, that's so cool.
So, yeah, I guess I have, I always wanted to do shorter races. So I've even got like a little series in the first part of the year, in the summer months, of really short ones, like 2 hour, between 2 to 5 hour type length races.
Yeah.
And they're just like quick, easy, min admin, rock up,
yes,
learn what the sport's about, see how it goes. And then this one coming up in September is like my sort of medium length race, where there's 6 hour, 12 hour, and then a 36 hour. And that kind of gives good tiers of, you know, where you want to slot in. Like if you complete newbie and want to start, 6 hours perfect. It's like aimed at kids as well. And yeah. And then like 12 hour is a little bit more
of a challenge,
a little bit more of a challenge, but still like achievable and like just a fun day out as well. And then the 36 is intentionally proper challenge.
Yeah, you're
like
starting to tap into, I'm not going to sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
Starting to get long.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, I guess, as I said to you, I just want to make the sport more digestible. So like understandable to someone that doesn't know it, and more accessible, like try and remove the barriers of entry, because it is a sport where there's quite a lot and there's quite a lot of effort required, and just try and make it, appealing to people that are interested, you know?
Yes.
So
funny. It seems like the adventure racing bug, once it bites, you're done. And I've got friends who I know, you know, it's like Dave Biggs, Matt Pitcher, who, and they told the story. They were so excited. They like total, they're going to be so bleak that I call them novices, but like they signed up a team that's like chaos, figuring stuff out, whatever. And then they found themselves like in a position where I think they were doing one of your 48 hour ones, or a longer one. It at least required them to go into the night.
And
they somehow figured out, oh flip, like quite a long way in, we're actually winning. And the team who they thought were winning was like Robbie Rohrig and like some experienced like top athletes. And they were like, no ways. And there's this element of like, can we win if we just wing it like hard enough? And they go and they were all searching for the same checkpoint. And these guys were like, no, let's turn off our headlamps and like keep quiet. Like even when we find the checkpoint, like don't cheer, don't anything else. We're going to give it away. And they like, I think the other team took a wrong turn. So then they found the checkpoint and now they're like, like whispering, took a picture, and then purposefully, what else did they do? They try to like cover their tracks or whatever, and then
that's hilarious.
They get out of the wherever they're going, and they're like, hey, they're gunning it for the finish line now. And then I think Matt, something happened to his bike, something broke off, something fell off, and now he's like having to like run with his bike, and the team's left him, and he's like, I'm so tired, and he's like shoving jelly babies in, and then, but now he's like, no, I'm leaving footprints. These guys are gonna see, and it became this like, and it became this like epic dice for the finish. And I actually can't remember if they did end up winning, but I was just laughing. I was like, and they probably think like we're being so quiet or so sneaky, and then actually somebody passing by would have been like, yo, there's a lot of noise going on like around about here.
And that genuinely, you've almost summed up what makes adventure racing so epic, is that so much of it, you just can't, it can't be captured, and you almost can't script it. Like, it's,
yeah,
it's too good when you're in it and you're adventuring and you're immersed. You just, like, there is no better, because it's just, as I said, it's constant adaption, and it's stuff you can't quite, well, like sharing the war stories after a race. I just can't stop speaking,
yeah,
because there's just, yeah, so much to speak about. And it's like, all you were at is, you only did like 12 hours. Like, yeah, not, I don't mean only like it's nothing, but I'm meaning like,
you're like,
so
how much,
much
could actually
so
happen.
So much happens,
yeah,
in such a short space of time.
I,
like,
had,
and
other,
you do so much. It's
kiff. Other friends who, like, another short story, or like in the same thing, it was like how, like, innovative you have to be in a crisis. So it's like they're on a long bike leg. Again, mechanically something went wrong, and they were like, okay, this bike is now like not functioning. It's going to be way too slow if this guy like tries to run with his bike. So they ended up MacGyvering, using spare tubes and like putting it one oak around the bike, one oak around the friend, and then like towing this person just to make it to the next transition so they can like fix their bikes and do everything. That's like another story that the neighbors just down the road chat about. I've heard such funny stuff about like getting lost and the nav stuff, and then trying to figure out how we're going to feed ourselves until we get to the next point. But yeah, so cool.
Proper.
And those friendships are like solidified, I think. Yeah.
Oh, next level.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Proper. You go to the ends of the earth for each other.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, without sounding dramatic, it sometimes becomes like it's a matter of survival. Like, without being too dramatic about it, it's like, yeah, just the four of you doing your thing and getting through it,
yeah,
finding the checkpoints, and
wild,
you only, and as we were speaking about that, like, zone, as Lance says, like, you just become focused on the necessities. You,
yeah,
just don't worry about anything else but feeding yourselves, drinking, and like moving forward.
Yeah.
And that's, it's so simple.
Yeah.
That's all it becomes.
And that's actually something I wanted to ask you, Brundle, is like, I think you wrote quite a cool post about it as well on Instagram, but like the parallels between what you learn in adventure racing and then what you're applying to life, like a bit more of a philosophical one, but.
Massive. Like, can't even touch sides on what you can take from that sport with teammates. You know, team element is huge. Like, I keep saying to my wife now that I'm a new father, it's like team sport is, be it just a pair, be it a team of four in adventure racing, or be it a freaking,
yeah,
hockey 11 or whatever. Like, it's so huge. You have to, you're part of a system. You're not just about yourself. You,
yeah,
can't just worry about yourself. And that's, to be honest, why the sports sort of adventure racing, as an example, is not also for everyone. Because, like, there is a beauty in individual sports, but you're only yourself. And,
yeah,
like, that's huge as well, because you've got nobody else to depend on. But there is something, as I said, so epic about a team sport. And the parallels that brings that into life is, like, just so huge.
Next level.
You have to look after each other, care for each other, be stern when it's needed, but be caring when it's also needed.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Does it make,
yeah,
sense? And, yeah, I guess that's, funny enough, why experience is so huge in the sport, is because it's just teams that can, as a unit, stay together,
yeah,
roll with the punches, sleep when needed, repair each other when needed,
yeah,
and push when needed,
yeah.
And that's, I guess, where the experience element comes in, is you can't get that any other way.
Yeah, you just have
you
to
have
go
to
through
go
it
go through it.
And so cool that, like, not everyone will hit a dip at the same time,
for,
like,
sure.
There's very little chance. If you have, then eesh. Hopefully you've got that one happy chappy, happy camper in your team. But yeah, I think that's a cool thing, just from the outside looking in. Yeah, I'm saying all of this as if I've done long adventure races. It's definitely on the list.
I have legitimately, if it weren't for Corinne and Zane, I would be dead on top of the Drakensberg, like, without a shadow of a doubt. I was,
yeah,
a drunk man walking with altitude sickness, and they, like,
oh,
just pulled
no.
me off the mountain.
Yeah.
And then the minute I got to the bottom, it was like, okay, cool, my turn to help yokes,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, because you broke yourself, you know, getting
and
you
that's
down,
the cool,
yeah,
thing about the sport, is like, yeah.
That's epic.
You can have your moment.
Yeah, and those friendships forever. Like, yeah.
Huge.
Can't imagine.
Massive.
And I mean, Brundle, now, like, where if people are not stoked after listening to this about adventure racing, I don't know what else we can do for you. But what's next? Where can people, like, find, and yeah, where can, let me start with this. Where can people find No Frills, No Fuss in the next couple of weeks and months.
Okay. I guess Instagram is probably where I just do the most of the sort of posting and stuff. I do have a newsletter. It's on the website, nfnf.co.za. You can sign up to that. Also a WhatsApp channel, but Instagram is also a good point. No frills, no fuss.
Yeah.
And
where did that name come from?
As I said, it fell on my lap to start to make an event. And yeah. I was like, oh, it was so informal. It was literally like a Google sheet. You signed it up. It was a couple of oaks and it was close by. It was even during curfew time. So like I had to slot it in with a 12-hour period as well.
No way.
And allow for people to drive an hour there and a drive an hour home. So like I had to, you know, curate this adventure.
Yeah, that's
epic. fitted within the parameters. And I wanted to keep it focused on the important things, and that's the adventure and the time out there and being tested. Like that's also a big part of my thing, is like I want people to go to those moments with the team or individually that you come out a better person.
That's epic. I love this, guys, and the everything is just cool. The branding, the vibe, when you get there, it's awesome. I mean, part of this as well, Brundle, is like, so the Cogman's Trail was like a massive success. So this is Montague, guys, beautiful mountains.
So good.
Even just the drive there, we were all like a couple of friends who drove out and we were like, look at these mountains. We're like, obviously Brundle chose this spot for his race. And seems like that was also a massive success, and there's some big things cooking for 2025.
Yeah, very, very keen to throw in a longer distance.
I've heard rumors of an ultra. Yeah.
Really keen to step it up. So the longest distance currently is 34Ks, and it's just, Montague is majestic. Yeah. I guess anybody that's done the Kochmans will have experienced those trails. They're full on. They're amazing.
Yeah.
But it's proper mountain running and it's just proper spectacular.
Yes.
And yeah, I guess it was sort of my hood. My folks have been farming there or living in that area since 2016, 2015.
Oh, wow.
So I've been going back and forth there, and actually my wife and I recently lived there, but now we moved back to Cape Town. But so it's been my backyard for quite some time. I've hosted two adventure races actually from there, so I can know the area well.
Yes.
And it's to put on a trail run is epic, you know, because that's also where where I guess my eventing started, and where a lot of my starting of outdoors before adventure racing actually started. It was around trail running.
Yeah.
It's cool to. Cool to see where it can go. Yeah. I think it's got some legs to become something really epic.
Definitely.
I hope so.
We already were like, it's on the calendar for next year.
That's right.
It's locked in.
Lekker.
That's definitely happening. But Brundle, something that's cool, or like the unique position that you're in, is it feels like you've been on all sides of like the hexagon that it takes to like be in an event, whether it's like background organizing, on the mic and at the finish line, directing the race, doing the race. It's like, I mean, have you ever spectated? Is that something you've done? Like, is that like...
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, I think I always say it's important to be able to be, you know, if you want to call it a chief and an Indian, if that makes any sense or relates, is that like sometimes you're the leader and sometimes you're the supporter.
Yeah,
and
epic.
And it's like my wife's amazingly supportive of me doing these endeavors and is insane that I'm excited to support and spectate and support anyone.
Yeah.
I have where I can.
You supported Lachie at that run.
Yes,
in
correct.
I want to say Hope Bay. It finished.
Yeah,
in
it
Hope
was.
Bay.
It was.
Yes.
It did. Fisherman's Trail.
Fisherman's Trail. Yes. That was it.
So it's important to be able to slot into whatever role is required. So I love spectating as well.
Yes.
I guess I do less of it because I'm probably behind the mic, but to be honest, that is the best spectating seat in the house.
Yeah,
often.
That's awesome.
If it's, not taken by another MC, I guess it's cool to be that person, you know.
And the race directing role, I think we had Zane's Hall episode on that in the lead up to Mutt. And I think so many people, or like the response to that, people were like, what? They had no idea what goes into it. And then we even took it really behind the scenes at Mutt itself. And
really?
Deep, like from epic. Who bought the timing system out of Switzerland to like, what is the amazing. Thoughts going into like recycling all of the branding and supporting local and just like, it's not just an event, right?
Sure.
There's like so much that goes on. So your experience race directing, like any nuggets that have come out of that have really like challenged and changed you?
Yeah, I think, I guess to always remember, and once you've done it a few times, you can kind of keep sight of the goal. But certainly in like the week leading up to it, it's often like super like, oh my word, I'm sinking here.
Yeah.
But to know that like the minute the gun goes off and you see people stoked and out there and running your marked course or running your unmarked course, you're just like, ah, oh, this is all worth it.
Yeah.
And to know that reward is there is just cool. And I guess, yeah, I'm lucky in the fact that for me is, you know, trumps any financial benefit, is to be able to just see what people, yeah, they're growing as people and as individuals or as mates running together the whole way or whatever. It's just so epic to witness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Being a facilitator of people's memories or magic that they're making out there, you know, it's sometimes you got to pinch yourself to realize like, flip, okay, you've brought 150 people or whatever to this place, this random location, this random date.
Yes.
You've brought them here.
Yeah.
And they're going to go and have a cool kick-ass day or a kick-ass weekend.
Yeah.
And it's not only thanks to you, but it's largely thanks to you putting it out there. And it's cool. And that's where it's so rad to get support. You know, you're like, okay, people dig this.
Yeah. And people turned up like from all the far corners of the Western Cape and beyond for that Kochman's race, and I'm sure the adventure racing as well. Like, yeah, the people love you, Brundle. So it's cool to see you succeed and
shorter.
And like, yeah, make it accessible. I think it's so easy. You could have just been like, oh, I can race 500K's worth of adventure racing and that's how I'm going to stick to that. But instead you were like, man, can I like break this down to a point where we've got like a little 6-hour situation, someone can learn to nav and make all the mistakes, and if they do, it's like not only 6 hours, but like they'll be okay, you know.
Yes.
Really cool.
And I mean, I think that's a cool element, eh? The navigation side of things of adventure racing is like, I've also host nav courses. This is not a pant of my nav courses, but it's like, it's such a cool element and it's such a thing that we've lost touch with.
I mean,
let's be honest, we have Google Maps. It tells us turn left, turn right, tells us what to do.
Yes. If somebody says and northeast, you go, what?
Minute she says it, every time I'm like, I don't even know where that is. I don't know what do you mean? So it's cool. Like to not completely lose touch with that skill in life.
Super interesting.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Like it's cool to be able, because I mean, let's be honest, in the Cedarburg, Google Maps isn't helping you.
No. Yeah.
So you need to know the map and that's the only way you're going to find your way around there. So, and there are still many places around like that where you're just actually just going to need a map and a compass.
Yeah.
Or a map, most importantly. But a compass helps if it, you know, gets really needed. But it's like, it's a cool skill to still know and have. And you don't have to be an expert at it, but at least have a gauge on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I'm stoked about the nav side of things. I'm notorious for being bad at that, so let's see.
Yeah, but that's also fine, you know. It's not everyone's cup of tea, and that's I guess why it's cool to be. Maybe if you're not a person inclined, you just hop in with someone that knows navving.
We actually, I think I had some friends do the face. It was Bakes, Michael Baker, and Josh Raymond. Them and Bakes took like the. Not, I don't think Josh is bad at nav, but he like didn't back himself, and then Bakes was like, cool, you head of nav, so go for it. And Josh was like, what? And then he did it, and he'd never done, and I think the guys all backed him, and they finished to face it, and now he's like, oh, okay, but what's next? And now I think he's in for the adventure race, which is cool.
Oh, really? Good.
So now I'm like,
super rad.
So,
that's cool.
Yeah, translating that. Okay, if I can do it here, can I do it there? So yeah, taking the steps and having the space to do it is epic.
Yeah, for sure.
And Brundle, before we let you go, a couple of things. What is up next for you adventure-wise? Like, what is in the pipeline? I mean, you're obviously in Namibia earlier this year. Are you going to be racing anything again this year, or is that busy with other endeavors?
So right now, wrapping up the masters and
nice,
prepping my adventure race, which is in 3 weeks time.
Epic.
Is the big focus, because that's quite a big push. It obviously, you know, I go and scout it all, so it takes a fair bit of time because there's no quick way to do it.
Yeah.
So you got to go and get it done. So that's the focus for now, and then probably hopefully there's another two races left in the year, one in October and one in December, adventure races specifically. So try and do those. Try and see if we can slot in some more adventure in between there.
Nice.
A bit of holiday, because it's been a big push in the last couple of months for myself and my wife. And then Yeah, and then next year, yeah, host some more short races again. And then I've got one really cool thing on the pipeline, and I'm hosting the expedition race next year, which is a big one in the Ruchtersveld.
So cool.
It's been a dream of mine. I threw it out in 2022 and it wasn't the right time.
Yeah.
So I kind of just put it on ice, and just luckily, as I said, Expedition Africa, as Heidi and Stefan, are not hosting one in 2025, that I thought, like, okay, flip. This is my opportunity to put on an expedition to in a place that I've really wanted to take and test people.
Yes.
And if anybody's been to the Ruchtersveld,
yeah,
probably the holy grail of adventure in this country.
Yeah.
To have a radical river.
Yes.
Surrounded by crazy wild desert peaks. It's just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And as I said, I've always wanted to take people there, that the opportunity has arisen. So the Rattle was born, and that's it.
The Rattle is going
to hopefully have people immersed and in a good team doing their thing.
So awesome, Brandel. Oh, okay, guys, very exciting. I will put all the links in the show notes for all of these events so you won't miss it. Brandel, what is Roundoff question that's kind of unique to season two? Because it's so cool for me to chat to like each human who comes through, but like everyone's got inspiration coming from different places. But what is something that you've read recently that's inspired you?
Wow. I'm a very bad reader, I'll freaking admit. But I think it's weird. I was in a... It's so random. But I was in an airport lounge and I was like, yeah, this thing's so luxurious and it's so plush, but it's pretty freaking nice.
Yeah.
And it made me think, I was like, if anybody knows Mike Horn, he's a pretty hardcore adventurer. He's a South African oak. He's become a motivational speaker for so many cricket teams and international sports teams and bloody blah. And he's done some really hardcore stuff. And I even thought, flip, I'm pretty sure Mike Horn is slotted into an airport lounge himself. And it made me think of, like, people often see these guys, they're like, yo, be it adventure racers or trail runners, they're like, yo, those people are so hardcore.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, they're nothing special. They're just ready to do it and have probably, like in Mike Horn's case, he's been there and done that and done a lot of stuff like it, and he can roll with the punches. And for sure, some people have a maybe higher pain threshold than others. But I think it comes back to my slogan of NF is like, just get stuck in.
Yeah.
Just whatever it is, go and do it.
Yes.
If it's a 5K and that is your 100 miler, radical.
Yeah.
Like that is equally as freaking motivational and moving for some people as it is to go and do a 100 miler or an expedition adventure race or whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, who knows what bug bites, but go and throw yourself out there.
Yeah.
Do
let,
it.
Let a bug bite you.
Yeah.
Love it.
Go do it.
Yeah.
Just go get it done.
Yeah. And Brandel will bring you home with as much enthusiasm if you've completed a 5K or 100 miler.
Even if you're running at 3 a.m., 4 a.m., I'm hopefully still there full here. So I'm sure I will be.
I've seen you at loads of events, Brandel. But and even the post-event energy, I don't know how you do it. I think it was last year, post-UTCT. You don't even know this about you, but you'd been like on the mic for like the whole last 4 days, like min sleep, everything. And then I came... Yeah, was it the Sunday or the Monday after UTCT? It was maybe even the Sunday. So like post prize giving. And I get here and I went to go buy coffee at Balance Coffee Roastery. And then there I see, I'm like, no ways, is that Brandel? And here you were dressed on the phone like, bro, are you going to like join me for this section of like whatever, Hardcorp, I'm going on this mission. And there you were getting into the mountains. I'm like, this guy hasn't slept in like 4 days. But I'm sure that was just you wrecking something or taking a gap to get out there. So I love the energy.
Yeah, I like it, man. Well, I guess gaps to get out there are a little bit less right now. So I've got to flip and take them when I got them.
You've got to take them all. Brandel, thanks. This has been so cool. I think the adventure racing stoke is high, myself included. I'm like thinking, what's next for me? That Rattle is sounding like something that I'd love to go and have a look at. But yeah, thanks for sharing with us, sharing the passion. We back you, and I'm excited to see where No Frills, No Fuss goes. And yeah, good luck handing in that Masters. We back you for that.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for your support. Thanks for your kiss. Thanks for your incredible podcast. It's so cool. And yeah, just, yeah, shot for the support. It's, as I said, moving to have people support you and be stoked on what you're putting out there, you know?
Yeah, and we are. It's awesome.
Radical.
Thanks, Brandel.
Shot.